I don't think a single fundamental sort of driving fact about this epidemic has been represented correctly. And it's obvious to experienced scientists like me. And when I've spoken to lots of my peers, they agree. So it's not like I'm an unusual person in thinking as I do. What's unusual is that I have come out and said so. But you would think the vaccine manufacturers should have done their homework and checked whether or not the piece of dead virus that they were having human cells manufacture through these gene-based vaccines would not itself be harmful. But it seems to me, I can only assume they missed it. I put it to you and any listener, can you think of a benign explanation for why you would want to give an experimental use authorized gene-based vaccine to millions, tens of millions of people who cannot possibly die if they ran into this virus? And the answer is no, you can't, can you? The pharmaceutical industry is already manufacturing so-called top-up or variant vaccines. Now, if I'm right, and they're not these variants aren't different enough to warrant a different vaccine, and they are not, what is it that they're manufacturing? I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm actually terrified. Once you're on this system and your whole life is permissioned by your status on this system, have you got a valid vaccine or not? Say you won't be able to go to the shops anymore. Eventually, you might not be able to buy gasoline or leave your house. Whatever the rules the control has set, you will then be coerced into doing whatever they tell you. Is that really what you wanted? If not, you better start demonstrating, because single individuals like me can do nothing. I can warn you and explain how much danger we're in, but you behind the camera, you watching, if you don't do something, these criminals are going to steal liberal democracy and freedom forever.
I'm speaking with Mike Yeadon, who was a former executive at Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. Mike, would you just please introduce yourself and give us a little bit about your background?
Yes, certainly. So my name is Dr. Mike Yeadon. I'm a veteran of the pharmaceutical industry. I have a degree in biochemistry and toxicology, a PhD in respiratory pharmacology, and 32 years of leadership in new drug discovery in allergy and respiratory. First in a number of large companies, most recently Pfizer, where I left 10 years ago as chief scientist and head of allergy and respiratory research. And over the last 10 years, I've acted as an independent, consulting to several dozen startup biotech companies, and was happy to be able to found and run successfully to completion my own biotech that was then acquired by Novartis. So I'm an independent now, but I'm broadly experienced in the required sciences, specifically the life sciences, required to understand disease pathology and potentially ways to intervene beneficially in those diseases.
I guess it's safe to say that you're not anti-pharmaceutical as a general rule. You have been developing these for a number of years. Recently, you authored or co-authored a letter to the European Medicines Agency. Can you tell us what the substance of that letter was and what your concerns are?
Yes. Yeah, so of course, I'm pro novel medicines, especially pro safe and effective medicines. And of course, like anyone in that industry, I'm very troubled if something that doesn't work or is not safe is being rolled out, and that's my concern. So turning to letter I co-authored with Dr. Wolfgang Vodarg early in December 2020, we wrote a petition really to the European Medicines Agency because we were concerned that these gene-based vaccines were moving at too great a pace, that they had not acquired a sufficient safety database to allow these vaccines to be widely rolled out. And we anticipated, as it turned out correctly, that in my view, completely reckless dispensing of these novel technology vaccines would go ahead. So what was the substance? Fundamentally, these are new technology products. There are no products of this kind where they use a gene, sometimes then a virus, to bring the gene inside the cells of the human body, get those cells to manufacture part of the pathogen. And it's that to which you respond to make an immune response, to become vaccinated. Normal vaccines use an already dead pathogen. So this is quite different in that the genes for the pathogen are what's being injected, and they're inviting your body to manufacture part of that that pathogen. And so I would say the unknown unknowns were a significant concern for us, because we simply don't know what will happen downstream of that event. It's not been done before. The moment I'm seeing the way these vaccines are rolled out, with the assurance that they're safe, even in the short term, and completely ignoring the potential for longer term side effects. Just imagine a scenario where 1% of people after a year or two get some, you know, unexpected problem. What are you going to do? You've already given it to the majority of the population. So when we rolled them out with these vaccines to people who are not at any risk of dying from the virus, you know something very bad is happening. So yes, we wrote the letter to the European Medicines Agency. Our broad concern was new technology, you need a good safety database. Didn't have it, be careful. And then I had a list of specific concerns that people have focused on, but they're just simply not, they're just minor details. The main one is we just don't know what happens in the long term with these new technology products. That's that.
I don't think people recognize, I know in the United States, at the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has given these vaccines only what they call emergency use authorization. Is that the case in Europe as well? They've not been officially approved by the EMA?
Yes, none of these gene-based vaccines have been through the normal research and development phase to completion. In fact, the ones that are being used in United Kingdom at the moment, from Pfizer-BioNTech, AstraZeneca-Oxford, and I think the Moderna one now, just arriving, all of these are still deep in their pivotal or phase three clinical trials, and they don't finish for roughly 2 years. And you're pointing out to the public that they're not just playing around. Those 2 years are in order to gather evidence of robust continuing activity, what you want to happen, and also to check whether or not anything bad happens. And we just don't have that data. They've been given only emergency use authorization. They claim it's an emergency. It's not obvious anymore that there is an emergency. There was perhaps a year ago. But in addition to that rather substantial question, there are numerous other pharmaceutical treatments like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquinone, vitamin D, corticosteroids, and all of these have been battered out of existence by, I believe, criminal people working for or around the government. Because if any of those things were approved, even off-label, it would undermine the rationale for these vaccines that would then have to wait until they'd finished their normal clinical development. So we've only got them under emergency, and it's only an emergency because they say so, and there are only no alternatives, which is also a requirement to get an emergency use authorization, because all of the viable alternatives have just been suppressed.
I wonder how this could happen, because it feels like I seem to recall that there are provisions in international law against this. It seems like we are involved in what is effectively the largest phase three clinical trial in human history, and people don't realize that they're participating in a clinical experimental trial. As I recall, the Nuremberg Code prevents this sort of thing. Subjects of human experimentation are meant to be able to give their informed consent, and I'm not sure that they have. And so, how can this sort of, what seems to me, an egregious violation of international law that's been longstanding since the horrors of Nazi experimentation, how can so many governmental agencies all over the world be countenancing this? And if you could explain the Nuremberg Code and you know, what it entails.
Yeah, so yes, I think that's a fair comment. It's like the largest phase three clinical trial in world history. Yes, the Nuremberg Code that was put together after the Nazi doctors' trials after the Second World War, in which a number of doctors were prosecuted for having performed experiments on, of course, unwilling human subjects, some of whom died, and the court decided that these doctors should be, in many cases, subject to the death penalty, and they were hung.
In the dock, once occupied by their leaders, are 23 Nazi doctors accused of many crimes in hospitals, concentration camps, and research centers. All the accused pleaded not guilty, but time and evidence alone will decide their future.
The Nuremberg Code was written after that, designed expressly to prevent involuntary experiments on human beings without their consent. I've looked at the consent forms for vaccination, the ones that have been available to me. None of them mention that these products are still in the experimental phase. I'm afraid it's no question they have not received regulatory approval anywhere. They don't always say that they have, but there's never a comment that these are experimental, and therefore we don't know what's going to happen. When you don't know what's going to happen, even at a population level, I think it's fair to say it's an experiment and you're part of it. So yeah, people are just being told things like, this vaccine is safe, you know, please come as soon as you offer it and come and get it. And it seems to me that law and order has just largely failed in this country. And of course, I can't explain it. My answer at this point, when people ask me, is to say, my answer is, it's not my crime. I've identified, along with other people, that very, very improper and I would say dark things are happening. But as to why they're happening and who's driving it, I'm afraid I don't know. It's not my crime.
Perhaps people supporting this vaccine rollout would reiterate once again that this is an emergency. Can we just go over the reasons, perhaps starting with some of the other mitigation efforts that you've noted in the past were not effective and, in fact, perhaps damaging? And as you mentioned, and perhaps we could reiterate, there are treatments, effective treatments, that have been given. I happen to know that at certain wealthy and in various areas of the United States, hospital systems have been giving hydroxychloroquine and zinc. They've been giving ivermectin, and they've been steroids, etc., all with great success. So there are effective treatments available. Why? How can we justify this as an emergency when even without treatments? The survivability rate of this disease, COVID-19, is 99.7% if you're, under 65 or 70, and not much less than that if you're older and have comorbidities.
Yeah, it's a great question. There may have been an emergency certainly in the spring in the Northern Hemisphere last year, although I wasn't an enthusiast of so-called lockdown. I could understand why terrified political leaders and their advisors might err on the side of caution. But I'm afraid since nothing, in the UK at least, United Kingdom, absolutely nothing, the government and their advisors have informed the public about any of the sort of key pieces of information. Not one of them has been true. It's not just the occasional slip. For example, the polymerase chain reaction or PCR, no one defines its rate of false positives. Every test produces some positives when the virus is absent. We know this. But the authorities running it simply refuse to engage with scientists who say, what is that rate operationally? You need to net that off, the gross. You just get abuse, trolling, and eventually censorship. They also do not unify how many cycles of amplification, because it is an amplification technique, how many cycles before we all say, if that's not positive, then we'll say the virus is absent. It's just the Wild West out there. So number of cycles, failing to define false positive rate, and from time to time, some labs, instead of using three probes or primers to identify unique spots in the virus, all three of which have to be positive to say, yes, that's consistent with the virus genetic information being in the sample. Sometimes they'll use two genes, sometimes one gene. And I'm afraid the unifying observation is that all of these cheating, bits of cheating really, serve to increase the number of inverted commas cases. And that's not just a diagnosis, it also ends up being an attribution label. So if a person should die within 28 days of a positive test, how bad that test was, they're called a COVID death. And I just don't believe anything like the number of people who are claimed to have died absurdly with COVID rather than of it, have actually died even with it, let alone of it. So everything we're being told has manufactured or has amplified the harm and psychological fear and harm from this virus from top to bottom. So bad testing, lies about the idea that you can be completely symptom-free and yet represent an infection risk to people around you. That is a lie. And it's,
Can you speak to that a little bit more? What, you know, this idea of asymptomatic spread is, of course, the whole reason why the world has masked up, locked down, social distancing, all of this stuff rests on that central premise that healthy people can make other healthy people sick. What do you say to that?
So yes, the concept of asymptomatic transmission, as you say, that someone who's apparently perfectly well can represent a health threat to another person who's perfectly well, is simply not true.